Go back into time with me a bit as I revisit a conversation that I had with Mr. Jim Ledbetter, who shared some tremendous insights regarding gold.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, dig it.
Solid.
Right on.
All right, everyone, we are back. I apologize for that. We had a power outage, as I mentioned, that knocked my phones out. And so we have Jim back on the line with us. I apologize again, and thank you so much for your patience as well, Jim.
I'm glad to be back.
I tell you what, it's amazing how things can happen. But we're talking about gold and the book, One Nation Under Gold. And if you could kind of take us back into history and share with us, well, first of all, Jim, let me back up for a moment, because I really like giving the Speaking With community an opportunity to first become a little bit more familiar with the person who is enlightening us when we're having a discussion. So if you could first please share with the community more about your background and how you came to write what you write.
Absolutely. I am the editor of Inc. magazine and Inc.com. That's a magazine that's been around since 1979, covers small, fast-growing companies, and I'm a professional business journalist and a historian on the side. And the origins for this book, One Nation Under Gold, really started with me in early 2012. I was watching the Republican presidential primary debates, and it dawned on me that there were seven men on stage debating, and six of them said that if they were elected president, they would either restore the United States to a gold standard or seriously consider restoring the United States to a gold standard. And I kind of thought, you know, there's no other country in the world where that debate is happening at that high a political level. And why is that? What is there about that proposal? Just leaving aside for a second whether it's in any way realistic or in any way a good idea, just strictly the politics of it. Why is that a vote-getter? Why is that appealing to this audience? And in fact, in 2012 and in 2016, the Republican Party platform contained a plank, not the most prominent plank in the platform, but it was there, saying, you know, we should seriously consider restoring a metallic standard to the dollar. The dollar has not been on a metallic standard for nearly half a century. So this is a very old-fashioned idea. And the more I looked into this question of kind of gold and American politics, gold in the American experience, the richer the story got. So that's really where the book came from.
That is awesome. And it is so fascinating that this is something that is almost partisan in the way gold is revered, respected, honored, whatever word we want to use. Let's go back to before any politicians were talking about gold standards, because you share with us that there was more than one gold rush in America.
That's right. In some ways, the relationship between gold and our country goes, you know, back further even than the founding of the Republic. If you think about the North American continent, it was discovered by Europeans who were trying to get to India, hoping for the gold, and there were all of these legends about, you know, cities of gold, El Dorado, rivers flowing with gold. I think they were a little disappointed when they got here, and at least in the North American part of the continent, there really wasn't any gold that could be found. But not long after the United States becomes its own country, in 1799, a teenage boy in North Carolina was fishing on a Sunday afternoon with his sister, and he stumbled upon a 16-pound rock that he thought was sort of interesting, and took it home and used it as a doorstop in the family barn for 3 years until a local jeweler was visiting the home and determined that, in fact, it was a big chunk of gold. And when that news got out, you have, you know, understandably, suddenly hundreds of people digging in the ground and, you know, there was a substantial amount of gold in North Carolina. Not too long after that, in your own state of Georgia, there were also some discoveries in the northern part of Georgia. So you have a kind of almost precursor to the major gold rush of the 1840s, and this was not a trivial amount of gold. The gold that propped up the U.S. Mint in Philadelphia for the first part of the 19th century, all of that gold came from North Carolina and the region down near Georgia. And I think so. This notion of being able to become very quickly wealthy by simply digging in the ground is, for better and worse, part of the American character. It is, we don't necessarily interpret events this way today, or many people don't interpret it this way. But at the time, it was very, and particularly when the major gold rush happens in the 1840s, a typical interpretation was that God had put this gold and silver, underneath the ground for Americans to discover as part of their birthright, as part of their destiny. And again, I don't think that's a very common interpretation today, but I think something about that we deserve it, that this is who we are, I think that remains in the American character, in our DNA.
And that's part of where we get the title One Nation, not under God this time, but under gold, because of the way that so many equated gold with God's divine favor.
Yes, to be part of the elect, and it's not completely by accident either. I mean, many religions going back thousands of years used gold as parts of ceremonies, as ornamentation for temples and churches, so that association with religion is hardly uncommon. On the other hand, your listeners who are familiar with the Bible also know that gold doesn't always play a positive role in the Bible. There's the golden calf, there's the idea of golden idols that the gods consider to be part of human greed and hubris. So there's a double-edged sword about our relationship with this metal. It is our fate for both good and bad.
That is so interesting. And so we find out that gold is something that was highly valued around the world before the land that came to be called America was quote unquote discovered by the Europeans. It was
absolutely,
and it was used in religion. And so fast forward to the point where it was discovered in America, and it begins to take on religious connotations again, just as in other parts of the world. And eventually there is a gold standard put in place.
Yes.
What is meant by, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So in the 19th century, it's kind of hard to grasp this now, but there was, for the beginning decades of this country, there was no federal currency issued by the state government, by the federal government. The founders of this country felt that concentrating political power and economic power in the same bodies was too much, and that it should be decentralized. Otherwise, it would become corrupt, like the Bank of England and the central banks of Europe. And so, what you had instead were banks issued their own currencies, states issued their own currencies, people used foreign money as legal tender. Through the middle of the 19th century, it was very common for people to use Spanish pieces of eight, or British pounds, or Mexican pesos, depending on where you were. Anything that could be valued, and of course those coins were made out of metal that could be melted down in theory, and was always had this value. But you don't really get a kind of full fledged workable gold standard until the middle to the end of the 19th century, and then it becomes very much the article of debate among different parts of the country. After the Civil War, the populists of the West and South, who were agrarian, often poor, very very new states to the Union, they favored returning silver as a as a means of money, as legal tender. And the East Coast wealthy industrial urban bankers favored a strict gold standard. You will remember the famous speech that William Jennings Bryan made in 1896. You will not crucify mankind on a cross of gold. Mm-hmm. That was a plea to restore silver. And what's fascinating about that is that a half century later, it flips. And the gold is now identified with that kind of populist, anti-central banking, anti-Washington sentiment, and it's the paper standard that is defended by the powers that be on the East Coast. And the reason that flips basically has to do with FDR and the Great Depression. When the Great Depression hits, the United States is on a gold standard, and for that reason, there's very little that can be done to fix the economy because of the presence of gold. In fact, a lot of the gold was leaving the country, which only made the economy more vulnerable in the early 1930s. When FDR takes over, the literally the first act passed does two things. One, it closes every bank in the United States, and two, it makes it illegal for Americans to own gold in any kind of investment form. So
wow,
in coins or in bullion.
That's amazing. So we went from having gold as the standard to being illegal. When we come back from the break,
right.
Could you explain to us when we come back what it actually means to have a gold standard?
I can't wait.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our guest, Mr. James Ledbetter. Again, the title of the book is One Nation Under Gold. We are discussing the wealth of knowledge that he has put in that book. Stay with us. We'll be right back.